Chapter 47. Daylight but Rebecca and her husband. The recognition was immediate. Rebecca flew into the arms of her dearest friend. Crawley and Osborne shook hands together cordially enough. And Becky, in the course of a very few hours, found means to make the latter forget that little unpleasant passage of words which had happened between them. Oh, you remember the last time we met at Miss Crawley's, when I was so rude to you, dear Captain Osborne? I thought you seemed careless about dear Amelia. It was that made me angry. And so pert. And so unkind. And so ungrateful. Do forgive me, Rebecca said, and she held out her hand with so frank and winning a grace that Osborne could not but take it. By humbly and frankly acknowledging yourself to be in the wrong, there is no knowing, my son, what good you may do. I knew once a gentleman and very worthy practitioner in Vanity Fair, who used to do little wrongs to his neighbors on purpose, and in order to apologize for them in an open and manly way afterwards, and what ensued? My friend Crocky Doyle was liked everywhere, and deemed to be rather impetuous, but the honestest fellow. Becky's humility passed for sincerity with George Osborne. These two young couples had plenty of tales to relate to each other. The marriages of either were discussed, and their prospects in life canvassed with the greatest frankness and interest on both sides. George's marriage was to be made known to his father by his friend Captain Dobbin, and young Osborne trembled rather for the result of that communication. Miss Crawley, on whom all Rawdon's hopes depended, still held out. Unable to make an entry into her house in Park Lane, her affectionate nephew and niece had followed her to Brighton, where they had emissaries continually planted at her door. I wish you could see some of Rawdon's friends who are always about our door, Rebecca said, laughing. Did you ever see a dun, my dear, or a bailiff and his man? Two of the abominable wretches watched all last week at the greengrocer's opposite, and we could not get away until Sunday. If Auntie does not relent, what shall we do? Rawdon, with roars of laughter, related a dozen amusing anecdotes of his duns, and Rebecca's adroit treatment of them. He vowed with a great oath that there was no woman in Europe who could talk a creditor over as she could. Almost immediately after their marriage, her practice had begun, and her husband found the immense value of such a wife. They had credit in plenty, but they had bills also in abundance, and labored under a scarcity of ready money. Did these debt difficulties affect Rawdon's good spirits? No. Everybody in Vanity Fair must have remarked how well those live who are comfortably and thoroughly in debt. How they deny themselves nothing, how jolly and easy they are in their minds. Rawdon and his wife had the very best apartments at the inn at Brighton. The landlord, as he brought in the first dish, bowed before them, as to his greatest customers. And Rawdon abused the dinners and wine with an audacity which no grandee in the land could surpass. Long custom, a manly appearance, faultless boots and clothes, and a happy fierceness of manner, will often help a man as much as a great balance at the banker's. The two wedding parties met constantly in each other's apartments. After two or three nights, the gentlemen of an evening had a little picket, as their wives sat and chatted apart. This pastime, and the arrival of Joe Sedley, who made his appearance in his grand open carriage, and who played a few games at billiards with Captain Crawley, replenished Rawdon's purse somewhat, and gave him the benefit of that ready money for which the greatest spirits are sometimes at a standstill. So the three gentlemen walked down to see the Lightning coach come inches punctual to the minute, the coach crowded inside and out, the guard blowing his accustomed tune on the horn. The Lightning came tearing down the street, and pulled up at the coach office. "Hello! There's old Dobbin," George cried, quite delighted to see his old friend perched on the roof, and whose promised visit to Brighton had been delayed until now. "How are you, old fellow? Glad you're come down. Emmy'll be delighted to see you," Osborne said, shaking his comrade warmly by the hand, as soon as his descent from the vehicle was effected, and then he added, in a lower and agitated voice, "What's the news?" Have you been in Russell Square? What does the governor say? Tell me everything. Dobbin looked very pale and grave. Of senior father, said he. How's Amelia, Mrs. George? I'll tell you all the news presently. But I've brought the great news of all. And that is, out with it, old fellow, George said. We're ordered to Belgium. All the army goes, guards and all. Heavy Top's got the gout, and is mad at not being able to move. O'Dowd goes in command, and we embark from Chatham next week. This news of war could not, but come with a shock upon our lovers, and caused all these gentlemen to look very serious. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.